Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
I'm Tom Riedel, your host for the Writer's Lounge Show here on Blog Talk Radio. This is show number 89, and today's guest is Jordan Crestwood, and he wrote Within the Flame After the Fall, book number one. He'll be on a little bit later after the first segment of the show. Wow, it's been a long time since I hosted here on the Writer's Lounge. The last time was in May of 2015, right before life took me on a detour. Don't you love it when that happens? Anyway, I left my beloved state of Minnesota on that detour, and now I'm back in central New York. I've been back in New York since 2015. It's where I grew up, and all is well. I'm back on track and very happy to be back on Blog Talk Radio. Here's what you'll need to know about the show. We showcase new authors, but we also have had experienced authors on too. On social media, we're still going strong on Facebook. Find us there at the Writer's Lounge showcasing new authors. On Twitter, you can find me at Tom Riedel 56, and that is spelled R-I-D-D-E-L-L. And you can read the reviews of the books that we host here on the show over at thomasriedel.net. And if you're an author, you'd like to be on the show, email us at writerslounge2020@yahoo.com and put review request on the subject line so we know what you're talking about. And also, it would be a good idea also to link us to the book you want reviewed, and we'll get back to you on that. Right now, slots are filling up, but I think we have an opening. I'm not sure. I think it's on Monday, April 29th is the next opening that we have, so we are filling up, and certainly after that, into the summer months, we'll have openings as well. So as of right now, after this show, we'll switch to live broadcast every Monday starting on the 15th of this month. And also, of course, you can receive those shows on demand after the show has aired. And all you have to do is go to the Blog Talk Radio site or just look for them on the Facebook page, and they'll be there for your listening pleasure. So that's it for the first 15 minutes of the show, and we've done this in the past. Usually I work with a co-host, so I'm going solo today, so just pray that I don't crash. But we focus on writers' topics, and it's for inspirations for all of you out there. And today, after our writers' topics segment, we'll introduce and talk with Jordan, who is now waiting, I see, on the switchboard. And Jordan Crestwood wrote, of course, again, Within the Flame After the Fall, book number one. Before you look, hear him, watch me stumble over my words. Before we bring on Jordan, I'd like to tell you a little bit about an experience as a writer and author that I have had that will lead in nicely to our writer's topic segment. A few months ago, I ended up publishing a book that I've been working on for over 30 years. It's called Poppy's Prison. It's a story about my grandfather slash adopted father who was involved in some very serious crimes back in the bootlegging days of New York City in 1920s. And he was responsible for many of the crimes that took place during that time with he and his partner who ended up murdered. So I have struggled with this. I've gotten news articles and probably over 50 pages of news articles and such from that back in the 90s. And I've just compiled them all into a book, which is more of a fictional characterization of what happened along with the actual segments, news segments of that time for that particular situation that involved my grandfather. So that took me on a bit of a journey of being kind of the first time that I've ever published anything that was sort of fiction slash historical fiction, because that's pretty much what it was. And I'm still struggling with all of it, including the marketing end of it and trying to get people to review the book as well as get people to buy the book. But here's the inspirational part. You have to get down on your computer, wherever you write, and just continue writing. Do not give up. Keep at it, and eventually it'll all come together. And whether your sales don't really take off like you'd like them to, mine haven't, but I've gotten some very good reviews. But even if they don't, you've got something that's yours that you can be proud of, something that you put together, and that is reason for celebration. So I'm celebrating being an author and putting together Poppy's Prison, which, by the way, if you'd like to buy a copy, you can head over to thomasridell.net and buy a copy over there, or look for it on Kindle. Do a search on your Kindle, and it'll pop up, and there you'll have it, right there on your electronic device. Isn't that marvelous how fast we can get a book these days? So leading into this, as I was saying, it's very difficult to write sometimes. And it's very difficult to believe in yourself to a point where you're going to hopefully get something done. But it's a lot of frustration. I don't think a lot of people understand how frustrating it is for writers. Well, this story that I'm going to play next is a story about an author that I think you'll recognize. He's very famous, and it's a story about him. And maybe you've heard some of it before, maybe not all of it, but I'm going to play it now. And after that, which is about 7 minutes and 21 seconds long, we'll come back and talk to our guest, Jordan Crestwood, right after this.
This story is a perfect example of how one success can destroy 1,000 failures. Some of the greatest people in the history of the world were failures at some point in their life. Stephen King, the famous American author, was one of them. When Stephen King was just 2 years old, His father left to buy a pack of cigarettes and never came back. He left the family when he was a child. He apparently witnessed one of his friends being struck and killed by a train. He had no memory of the tragic event. He left to play with the boy, but later returned, speechless and in shock. Later, his family learned about the tragic death of his friend. Some people are suggesting that this event, even though King has no memory of it, may have subconsciously inspired some of his darker works. Stephen was interested in writing from a very young age. He began writing for fun while still in elementary school, and that's how his first stories were born. He earned 25 cents apiece from his mother. It was a way to encourage King to continue his writing. By the time he was a teenager, he received more rejection slips than acceptance letters, but he didn't let the rejections discourage him. What did he do? He pounded a nail into the wall and hung up his rejection slips. But soon, the nail couldn't hold the weight of all the rejection slips, so he replaced the nail with a spike and continued his writing. In 1970, King graduated at the University of Maine with a Bachelor of Arts in English. He had to work all kinds of jobs, like gas pump attendant, janitor, and worker at an industrial laundry, to support himself and pay for his studies. A few years later, Stephen King lived in a double-wide trailer with his wife and two kids, and drove an old car that broke down very often. They also didn't have a telephone because they couldn't afford it. They were very poor. Even though he had a teaching certificate, he couldn't get a teaching job, so he had to work at a laundry service while his wife worked at Dunkin' Donuts. Later, he did get a teaching job with a salary of $6,400 a year, but that was not enough to make ends meet. Stephen King couldn't afford his own typewriter, so he had to use his wife's one from college. He worked on his novels in the laundry room, at a desk that was put between the washing machine and the dryer. He would lock himself in the laundry room to do his writing. It was there that he created his first hit novel, Carrie. When King first started writing Carrie, a novel about a girl who can control objects with her mind, he typed only 3 pages and quit. Before he could finish completing the script, he was overwhelmed with depression, and in anger he crumpled the pages and dumped them in the trash can. He was very disappointed in himself because he couldn't write from a woman's perspective. The story was going to be too long for any magazine. I couldn't see wasting 2 weeks, maybe even a month, creating a novella I didn't like and wouldn't be able to sell. But luckily, the next day his wife found the wrinkled pages in the trash and told him to keep writing. He was determined to quit, but his wife insisted, "You've got something here. I really think you do." And she was not wrong. 9 months later, the book was done. He sent it out to a list of publishers, and 30 publishers rejected it. "We are not interested in science fiction, which deals with negative utopias." They did not sell. How his life changed. Shortly after that, he received a telegram from editor Bill Thompson, saying that Carrie had been accepted for publication and that he would receive a $2,500 advance. It wasn't much, but with that money, Stephen King bought a new car and a telephone, and he continued his teaching job. A few months later, one phone call changed everything. It was Bill Thompson again. He asked King if he was sitting down before he could tell him the news that would change his life. He told him that Signet Books had the paperback rights and he would receive $200,000. I was still standing in the doorway, looking across the living room toward our bedroom and the crib where Joe slept. Our place on Sanford Street, rented for $90 a month. And this man I'd only met once face to face was telling me I just won the lottery. The strength ran out of my legs. I didn't fall exactly, but I kind of whooshed down to a sitting position there in the doorway. the rest is history. King has since published more than 50 books, all worldwide bestsellers. His books have sold more than 350 million copies, many of which have been adapted into films, television series, comic books. On your path to success, it's good to have someone to push you and motivate you to stand up, even if you fail. King's wife was his rock throughout his career. Even when they were very poor, she constantly encouraged him to write. When he didn't believe in himself, she believed in him. History is full of incredible stories of successful people who failed, but never gave up. You will never know what you're really capable of unless you fail sometime. Because with every failure, you learn, and you put more and more effort to finally achieve your goal. Never let failures bring you down and make you stop believing in yourself. Don't waste your precious time crying about your failures. Try again. You feel weak when you fail, but the power to stand up and face your failures is what define you. Because people who give up easily after failing don't succeed in life. On your way to success, filled with many failures, let one thing illuminate your path. Hope. Remember, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies. So, what's your story?
Okay, what is your story? That's a fantastic story about Stephen King. Can you imagine making $6,400 a year as a teacher and then getting Signet Books to sign a contract for $200,000? And that was many, many years ago, back in 1975. So, as she said, the rest is history. It's amazing what you can do if you put your mind to it. And look in the trash. There might be something there that's valuable, because a lot of us writers, well, if we don't throw away paper now, we might just delete. So don't hit the delete button. And if you do, don't throw out the trash in your computer. Somebody should be inspiring you to pull it out and take another look at it, because sometimes it's better than you think it is. So anyways, let's get on to the main event here. It's Jordan Crestwood. He wrote Within the Flame, After the Fall, Book 1. It was written by him and published in 2020. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook and on Twitter. Here's a description that Amazon gives for the book. Global explosions bring society to a screeching halt. Governments crumble, citizens must fend for themselves, and chaos reigns. James is a martial arts student visiting a city thousands of miles from home when the world explodes around him, surrounding him with destruction and death. Charlotte is a young woman with a troubled past and a unique way with people. When society dies and chaos takes its place, her strengths prove invaluable both to her and the small group of survivors she leads. In a world where the evil sees power and the morals of the good are tested by what they must do to survive, the search for safety becomes paramount. As this group struggles just to live another day, they discover the one truth. In the world after the fall, you grow stronger or you die. And with that, with just a little bit of a click of the button here, unmute the caller on hold, and just like that, he's up from the southern United States. Jordan Crestwood, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself?
Doing very good. What's the weather like down there today?
Beautiful. It's high 50s and sunny.
Very good. Very good. I can't wait for spring to finally get here and chase the rest of this virus away. Really looking forward to it. Yeah. So anyways, we did speak on a podcast. It didn't work out for technical reasons. So here you are on the Writer's Lounge. It's the maiden voyage of the Writer's Lounge after a 6 years absence. So with that, can you tell us about yourself and what inspired you to be a writer?
Absolutely. Yeah, as you mentioned, I'm from the southern United States, from Alabama specifically. And I was inspired to write. It's difficult to say where the inspiration began. I've always been a huge fan of telling stories. Even as young as, you know, in my early years, I would play with action figures and I couldn't just play with them. I had to come up with a narrative for them. I had to come up with a story about what they were doing. And you know, from there on, I would tell stories in different ways until my early adult life. I think in my early 20s, I began actually writing them down. And yeah, there are several authors that were inspirations to me. I had a very great time writing them down. It turned out to be my favorite method of storytelling. So I've just continued pursuing it from there.
Right. When you were playing with those action figures, did you give them voice?
I would say yes. Yeah, they all had their individual voices and their individual personalities.
Did it drive your parents crazy?
I don't think so. I think they were definitely fine with it. I mostly kept to myself as a kid until my brother was born. He and I would play together. So I think they were fine with it.
Yeah, very good. So your novel focuses on survival skills in a post-apocalyptic world. Do you possess any of those skills? Do you think you could survive what James is enduring in your novel?
That's difficult to say. I would say that I certainly possess some of the skills or at least the knowledge of the skills, if that makes sense. I've done a lot of research, and bushcraft and survival has been something I've been interested in for nearly a decade now. So I've done quite a bit of research and reading, and I've tried quite a bit of it out as well. I've gone out into the woods with no food, no shelter, and built my shelter and tried to find my food, which just means I built a crappy shelter and was hungry for a day or two. But yeah, I have practiced the skills, and there's at least a working knowledge of a few of them rattling around in the brain.
Uh-huh. And then when you're doing your research, where do you go for that kind of research? How much time did you spend doing research?
The time I spent doing research would be difficult to pinpoint because, like I said, it's just something I've done as a hobby for years and years now. So a lot of it for the book specifically was just things that I kind of had learned through previous research and just kind of came out. When it came down to the herbal medicinals and things along those lines, I ended up Googling different medicinals. Yeah, I knew certain ones like echinacea and things like that, but I would look for regional plants that grew in the area and try to keep it as accurate as I could with their usage and things like that. So there was a lot of Googling going on, and various websites is what I would pull from. Survival books that I've read, I don't recall the names of a lot of them right now. I'm looking around on the shelf. There was like a Special Forces survival book and things along those lines. And then a lot of YouTube. There are quite a few people out there on YouTube who are heavily into bushcraft and they've filmed themselves going out in the woods and doing these things. And that's definitely where I picked up a lot of knowledge. And that's what inspired me to go out in the woods by myself as well. So, or go out in the woods without the materials, I should say, not by myself.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of research being done on YouTube, and for people like us writers, can you imagine living in, like, say, 1950 when you had to go to the library? You had to actually go to the library
right.
to research books.
And then you're at the mercy
so
of what's
just
available at
your
that
computer
library.
And it's there within minutes. It's an amazing
Definitely.
World we live in. So anyway, before we go on to the next question, I just want to let everybody else out there that may be listening that you can call in to talk to either me or Jordan. And you can call 914-219-0868. And that'll get you into the studio here and we'll put you on. I'll keep an eye on the switchboard. Now, if you see anybody pop up, we'll try to get you in. If not, there are probably a lot of shy people out there probably listening to you right now, Jordan. And don't want to come on the radio. So anyways, with that, Yes, there are a lot of strange things happening in the world today. And in relationship to your book, I imagine a lot of people who are reading that book now of yours, and also number two that just came out, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'm sure they're reading it with the idea that we're not too far from that happening actually in reality, because right now we're living in a time that we never thought we'd ever be living in. And that would add up to the next question. Are there any situations happening in the world right now that you think could lead to a breaking down of society and disorder like you wrote about in your book?
I would say the potential is there. The big thing that I tried to focus on in the book, there are explosions and, you know, apocalyptic events, so to speak. But the thing I tried to focus on in the book was that it's the people that were the real danger. The chaos that ensued after the explosions was the actual danger that the people faced. And, you know, as everyone is kind of shoved into a world where no law exists, how do they behave? And kind of focusing on the differences between those things. So in that way, I would say that, you know, in a lot of, with whether it be political unrest or maybe even, you know, things related to the pandemic, which hopefully that's clearing up very soon. But, you know, there's always something, you know, and while it may not be a world ending event, it's not unusual whatsoever for different countries to experience similar things to what's described in the book. Only within their country, you know, and perhaps for a short amount of time. But I would say in that way, you know, perhaps we're close all the time. All it takes is
right.
The right amount of unrest. And, you know, there are far more citizens than there are, you know, police and military, and the danger's there.
Right. There's a lot of survivalists out there that were looked upon, I think, in the last few years as kooks. I would no longer call them kooks. I think that they really have something that we could all learn from. And I do know that if I was in the situation that James was in your novel, I probably would not survive. And I would have to rely on several of the people around me, which we talked about before when you were on the podcast, about the girl, the young girl, without giving too much of the plot away or too much of the story away, but a lot of them turned to her. And I kept wondering as I read that, if that wouldn't be the case now, where there's a lot of younger people that would be able to help out some of us older adults, because they may have a keener sense of learning than we would think to do in this situation. For instance, again, we're living during a pandemic and political unrest. And if you're 10, 11, 12 years old right now, imagine when you're sitting in a classroom, you're probably thinking, you know, what can I do to survive? I don't want to die. None of us do, but I have an idea that those kids that are now sitting in a classroom are absorbing a lot of survival techniques that you so expertly put across in your book. I really found it very compelling and very sobering to see that happening in the book, but also, again, thinking that it could actually happen. So anyways, you wrote the book, and then you completed it. That was your first book, correct?
It was. That was my first book to be published.
Okay, and when you complete your book, when I completed my book, we look to other people to tell us how good or bad we are. when you completed your book, did you have to look around for a reviewer of your story, or did you already have somebody in mind before you wrote the book?
So after the fall, specifically, books one and two, I had the luxury of actually one of my friends would read the book as I wrote it. As I would finish a chapter, I would send it to her, and she would read it and give me feedback. In fact, I was actually writing another story at the time called Shadow of a Dream that I was actually, that's the story that I was putting all this active effort into. And after the fall was just a side project for fun, just to basically send to my friend. And just, it was just a fun thing to do. That was sort of me taking a break from the serious work that I was doing on Shadow of a Dream. Uh-huh. And it just took on a life of its own. So, yeah, in that way, I had the immediate feedback chapter by chapter that was very helpful. And, you know, like a built-in reader that I was able to, like, it really invigorated me to continue writing, knowing that someone was reading it. Because that's, I think, ultimately, I can safely speak for both of us that's what it's about. You know, the money and the fame, whatever, maybe some people pursue that, but really and truly, you just want someone to read your work.
Right.
So having a built-in reader in that way was very invigorating. And and I also have another friend who, before, after the fall was even a thing, he was reading. You know, he and I both write. And, you know, I would send him my stuff. He would send me his stuff, and we would give feedback quite a bit. So actually, a few of my friends are very, very helpful in the foreword for book one. They're all listed out specifically by name because they were incredibly helpful in giving me the feedback that I needed on Within the Flame. You know, it went through several drafts, a lot of editing to become what it is today. And they were very helpful with that.
How are you with constructive criticism when you get a critical comment or a negative comment about something that you've written? Are you able to hold that in, or how do you deal with that if you've gotten those?
You know, constructive criticism, I don't think any of us like to hear something even constructively negative about our work, right? Because in a way, it's your baby. And it's like, you know, don't you dare say anything about my baby, you know. But
yeah.
I think that after the initial displeasure of hearing something, you also, I think I do fairly well with it. You know, especially like one of my friends, Michael is his name. He is very good at giving me constructive criticism and not just saying, oh, that was good, I liked it. He'll also say, you know, hey, I didn't like this, or I think this needs to change. And, you know, he and I both, when we give each other those criticisms, I think we both have this instinctual, you know, defensive reaction at first that we have to get past. But once we get past that, I think it's fairly easy to see the truth of what the other person is saying, if there's truth in it. And yeah, I would say I'm pretty easygoing in that, I believe.
How did you approach the publishing marketing process? That's quite involved these days, especially for self-published authors.
It is. I started looking first at traditional publishing, and I began looking for literary agents and things along those lines. But actually, as mentioned with Stephen King in the story that you played, there's a lot of rejection letters that come from that. And in the process, I began looking into self-publishing and how easy it is and how many readers you can reach so easily. You know, if you have a good cover, a good blurb, and a good story, the chances are, you know, that you at least have the option to be read out there. You know, like there's an option to have it picked up and read by people. So that is one of the things that really drew me to self-publishing. And as far as the marketing process goes, yeah, the marketing, I don't care for marketing, I've discovered.
Yeah.
Promotion and marketing, yeah. It's a very frustrating experience because that is really a whole other job in and of itself. Yeah, I think that's the negative thing about self-publishing is that, you know, if you're a writer, you write. But when you're a self-published writer, you're a writer, a marketer, I guess every writer's an editor, but you have all these stages that you have to take on. And, you know, you have to know whether or not, you know, you get this cover art. Is it good? Well, you have to find out. you don't have these professionals, these professional publishers who are giving you good feedback like that. So, yeah, I think that the marketing and the promotion is certainly my least favorite part of the process. However, it is a very essential part of the process. So the way I've approached it, I'm just remembering, trying to get back to your question. The way I've approached it is a lot of research. I've done a lot of marketing research, and I've tried to use Facebook pages for promotion. Like I'll look for post-apocalyptic pages and try to market to those folks. I try to market to Kindle Unlimited readers because, you know, Kindle Unlimited is a service where you pay monthly to read any book that's subscribed to that service. So my books are on Kindle Unlimited. So I'm basically asking people to go read my book and pay no money for it because they're already paying that money. So I've tried to really, really hammer in the marketing to Kindle Unlimited readers for that reason.
Right.
It's been a process.
Yes, it's a headache marketing wise that can sort of pull you down into not getting back to what's important, which is writing. Sometimes you get a headache and you just it takes the energy right out of you. So sometimes it's a good idea to, if you can, have somebody else do that for you. And then if somebody were to approach you, say, an editor or an agent or a publisher to go traditional, would you go traditional? Would you leave self-publishing behind? Or how important is that for you right now?
I would say at this stage, I would be willing to go traditional, certainly. I don't know that I would leave self-publishing behind forever. It's kind of like that that promotional game. Like if I go traditional, they're going to do a lot of the promoting work for me. And then when Jordan Crestwood becomes more of a name that's recognized, then I it'll be a lot easier to self-publish. You know what I mean? So I would certainly play the game with one foot in both happily. And in fact, so Shadow of a Dream, when I get ready to publish that one, I would like to pursue traditional publishing with that one specifically. I might end up self-publishing it because, like I said, it's a very lucrative and an easy route to reach a lot of readers. But yeah, I certainly have some interest in traditional publishing.
And you've just mentioned you published book number 2 in a series. Can you tell us a little about it with no spoilers, of course?
Certainly. I will try very hard for no spoilers. I have a hard time with that. With book 2, the story continues, and the characters who we left in book 1, unfortunately, with book 1, it ended on a cliffhanger. I say unfortunately because I don't really care for cliffhangers in stories, and it kind of irked me a little to end that one on a cliffhanger. However, books 1 and 2 were one massive 900-page manuscript in the early days that I split, vaguely split in half. So
yeah.
When I split it in half, I really had no choice but to leave it off at a cliffhanger. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. But the book 2 will continue on with those characters and describe or show what happens to them. And some new characters are introduced, some new folks come into the picture. And it's still all about survival. A few of the things I've tried to capture in the story are the effect, like nature. If you looked at any survivalist, a lot of them have this bug out plan. You know, bugging out means you're going to leave society and head out into nature to live on your own where it's, you know, you're safe from other people, right? But from my limited experience, I've realized that nature does not give a crap about you. And you get out there, nature's a dangerous place. So there was a little bit of that in book 1 where the people were you know, starving or thirsting to death. You know, like they're looking for water. They're trying to find food. And thankfully, the character you mentioned, Melissa, the young girl, comes in and helps them out. So there's a little of this survival against nature in book 1. But book 2 goes into it a little more in depth, I would say. And at the same time, they still have the lingering threat of what's going on with the other people in the story. And of course, at the end of book 1, there was a character who experienced some negative things. His story is fleshed out a bit more in book 2, and I don't know if we're supposed to choose favorites, but I think his storyline in book 2 is my favorite of the book.
What storyline is that?
So do you recall Greg from book 1?
Yes.
Greg and Lindsay.
Yep.
Greg's story is picked up quite a bit in book 2, and the things that his journey to survival becomes far more difficult in book 2. So he goes through some things, and it's a rather dark story, but it's very interesting to me the way it plays out.
So this story's been spinning around in your head for all these years, and after you're done with this series, Do you have anything else spinning around in your head for another story?
I do. I have another. I've mentioned Shadow of a Dream, which is not a completed manuscript yet, but it is probably 3/4 of the way or a little more than that. I have another book actually tentatively titled The Glass Cage that is about 3/4 of the way through as well. And so Shadow of a Dream will be a one book. It's just a standalone novel. The Glass Cage, however, will probably be book one in a series. And I think that that might be where I start putting my energies after the fall is over.
Great. So can we ask you what you do outside of writing? You're obviously not a full-time writer at this point, but what do you do when you're not writing?
I work in electronics, fabrication, and design.
Okay. Do you ever see yourself maybe in 5 or 10 years stepping away from that and writing full-time if the opportunity presented itself?
I would say if the opportunity presented itself and the opportunity was sweet enough, it would be silly not to. However, I do very much enjoy my day job. I enjoy the people that I work with quite a bit, and I enjoy the work quite a bit. It's good, fun, challenging work. So it would have to be, I would have to do quite well in writing to even consider leaving my day job. However, I would say yes. I much prefer writing over many other activities, and if I had the option to be paid to do that regularly, certainly, I would certainly take that.
It reminds me of the Stephen King story. Can you imagine making $6,400 a year as a teacher, and then they give him an advance on the book for $200,000? That's mind-boggling.
It really is, especially, I don't know what year that was that took place, but I imagine that $200,000 then.
Yeah, it was, I think, 1975. So
okay, so yeah, that's
$200,000. That's $200,000. That's amazing. So
it is.
With the story that you wrote, and after the fall, would you make any changes to the story or to the characters?
It's that's a difficult question because yes and no. Yes, because anytime I read anything that I've written, I don't have this problem when I read someone else's writing for the most part. Unless there's some glaring error, I don't want to change the writing. I just want to read it. However, when I read anything that I write, even if it's a note or like an email that I've written someone, if I go back and read it, I want to edit it. I want to change it to improve it. And so like with book one, for instance, and I suppose now with book two, while I was editing book two, I'm going back to book one to reference things and make sure that I keep things straight. And it drove me crazy. I would go back
right.
and read something and say, oh, this sentence would sound better this way. And
kind of
and I would just have to keep it.
Kind of a drawback of writing a series that you have to keep track of what's gone before.
It is, yeah. And then going back to read it, you know, there just had to be this disconnect where I said, no, this is published. You know, obviously I can't go back and change it now. So I think while I would love to edit my work to death to improve and improve and improve, so to speak, I think that there's not much I would change. I would say that some of the feedback I've gotten on specific characters, I feel like maybe their choices that they made. You know, one of the things I tried to go for in the story is that people don't always make good choices. Sometimes people make emotional and stupid choices that make no sense, but, you know, in the moment they seem to make sense because of the emotional trauma or whatever, right? So that has the drawback of making people dislike certain characters because of the choices they made. And maybe I'd go back and edit things to make the person's choices a little bit more understandable, but no, I don't think so. I think I like having the negative aspects of a person's personality and not softening that too much because that's people, you know?
Right. Who are your favorite authors and why?
My favorite author is a man named Jordan Cresswood. I apologize. That was a slip there. My favorite author is a man named Robert Jordan. So the Jordan and Jordan Cresswood, Jordan Cresswood is a pen name, the Jordan and Jordan Crestwood comes from Robert Jordan. It's an homage to him. Robert Jordan is the name of my favorite author. Well, I'm going to get a lot of crap for that one. But Robert Jordan is my favorite author. And he wrote an epic fantasy series called Wheel of Time. And it's like this, he actually died before completing it. I believe that book 11 was the last one he completed, but it went out to book 14, to 14 books. And it was this epic fantasy series, very, very detailed with a lot of technical yumminess that was to it. I really, really, really enjoyed that series. And in fact, most of what I read recreationally, fiction-wise, is fantasy, fantasy and sci-fi, but, you know, for the most part, fantasy. So George R. R. Martin, I enjoy his work. There's a man named Brandon Sanderson who has quite a few series out. He's a very, very prolific writer, but one of his series, the Mistborn Trilogy, is just a beautiful, beautiful work of art. And I really enjoy his work as well. But Jordan, Robert Jordan is certainly the number one in my mind.
If Within the Flame After the Fall were a movie, who would be the main character that you would choose for the star as the main character? Would be James. What's your name? Charlotte.
Charlotte, yeah. You know, I've gotten this question before, and I just can't answer it. I have what they look like in my head. And it's so difficult to find anybody who looks like that. So if it were to if it were going to come down to casting for a movie or a series or something, I believe I just have to leave it to someone else and nod and smile when they cast someone because like James, Charlotte, and Melissa are the big three that I would really like. I just have them and Sandra as well, I suppose. But I have them so firmly in my head what they look like. That it would be difficult on me to see someone else there.
When you do the cover of your book, how extensive is that as far as, if you want to call it stress or energy or work that you put into the cover? How did you approach that?
So I used a company called Damon Zah to do the book cover. And it was a fairly easy process. They asked me to send them other covers to other books that I liked that were in the genre. So I that was probably the most work actually, was just, you know, finding other book covers that I liked in the genre and sending that to them. They asked for a general description of what I would like. So, you know, I gave them a general description and their artists are just wonderful. I mean, with that, the first draft they sent me, I was blown away. I had like one small change to it, and you know, they got me a second draft within a day, and it was just it's like they saw inside my head. And you know, with a book cover, I try to avoid having the character's face on there because I don't want to like show the reader what the character looks like. I'd rather them kind of form it in their own minds. So
right.
I made sure to have their backs facing the viewer, so to speak. So I didn't have to worry too much about what they look like. You know, a person's back, nah, they all look about the same, right?
Right. What's your advice to writers who want to be authors like yourself?
Write and read, definitely read a lot. Because we pick up on it no matter what we're doing. But I also practice the martial art, and I think the martial art has taught me a lot of this, but you know, you pick up on things by doing them and by watching people who are better than you do them. So if I'm watching someone do a martial arts, a technique in a martial art, I have to maybe watch them, you know, if I'm lucky enough to get a video, I have to maybe watch it dozens of times. I have to feel it done on me dozens of times, hundreds of times, thousands of times. And then eventually I'm able to pick up on it. So I think that read. If you want to write fiction, read fiction. And then write. I mean, just write. Write for fun. I also run a couple of D&D games, Dungeons and Dragons, and that for me is just like a writing playground because I can just come up with stupid storylines that don't make any sense for the most part, and like test run them. You know what I mean? So just find opportunities to write, and then if it's something you enjoy, you're just going to do it anyway. It's just going to be like this thing that flows out. And then edit. Editing is the sucky part of writing. That's where the work comes in. The writing is fun, and then you have to sit down and go over and read your writing just so many times and just kind of make sure everything flows well. And that's so read, write, and edit. And just if you think you're done editing, just go ahead and edit it one more time just to be sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I would also say, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'd also say, you know, this is not an option for everyone, so it's difficult to give this advice. But if you have the option to proceed to seek professional assistance, like with editing and things along those lines, I would say definitely do that. If you have the financial option to, you know, editors are expensive, but if you save the money and do it, I think it's worth its weight in gold. My editor that I use has just not only taught me quite a bit about the English language, but has taught me quite a bit about the writing process. And, you know, things that I thought were hard and fast rules don't always have to be hard and fast rules. So anyway, that's some of the best money I've spent in the publishing process so far is hiring an editor and then hiring a book cover designer. But
yeah,
I would say that
it's the best advice you can give right there.
Mm. Because you know, no matter how good you are at writing and editing yourself, another pair of eyes, and especially a professional pair of eyes who knows specifically what to look for, not only with grammar, but with style and with, you know, if you can find someone who has worked in the publishing industry before, they know what to look for beyond grammar and style. They know what to look for as far as like what a reader wants to see. And I think that's very valuable.
Okay, so we're getting near the end here, Jordan, and I'd like to know if there's anything more you'd like to say before we let you go.
Thank you for having me on. It's always very nice to just run my mouth about things that I like.
You want to put in a plug to your editor or any of the people that have, helped you on your way?
Oh, certainly. So, my editor, her name is Anne-Marie Rotella, and I hope I'm pronouncing that last name correctly. I found her on a website called Readzy, which is a very nice website for connecting authors to professionals. And, you know, you're going to put out bids out there and they're going to, or you're going to put out, you know, your desire to have work done, and then people are going to put their bids in. And so it's a very nice format for connecting people. As far as the people, like I've mentioned Michael's name earlier, my best friend, actually, he and I assist each other quite a bit in our work, and he's been there to consistently help me all our lives, basically. And of course, Michaela was the name of the person who I was sending this book to chapter by chapter, and she was integral in having this book written. Once again, she gave me the energy to continue writing because I had a built-in reader. And she also just gave wonderful feedback that assisted me along the way. So, there's shout-outs in the start of the book as well. But, yeah, of course, I feel like I'm giving an Oscar speech, but, like, my family, my wife and daughter are just great to have around. I'm everyone contributes in their own way, right? You know, my wife watching, keeping my daughter and allowing me to have the silence to work and all these things, like that. Just without like this army of people in my life, it would be impossible to get this type of thing done. And I'm very grateful to all of them. My mother has always been incredibly supportive of everything I do. And she's just, yeah. Anyway, I'm rambling at this point, but yeah, I'm very, very thankful for everyone and their help.
Yes. Well, you did a good job. I really enjoyed the book and I look forward to number two, and maybe we can have you back on again someday soon. Where can we find you on the internet? I know I mentioned it earlier in the opening, but are there any other places that I may have missed besides Facebook and Twitter?
You'll find at jordancrestwood.com is my website. You'll find links to the books there. You'll find links to the social media as well. Basically, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are the three social media platforms. You can find me on there, Jordan Crestwood. And I believe that's about it.
Very good. Hey, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed having you on. I look forward again to having you on again. And you enjoy the good weather down there in the South. And good luck with your future endeavors in writing. You've got a future, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much. And same to you. I really appreciate you having me on. It's been a pleasure. And good luck to you as well.
Yep. Take care now.
You too.
Okay, there he goes, Jordan Crestwood, again, Within the Flame After the Fall, book one. And number two is coming out very shortly. So we're getting ready to wind the show up here. And I would just like to say that we will once again be back on the program. We're going to be switching to Mondays, every other Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So if you want to set your calendars for that, that would be much appreciated. And I've really enjoyed being back here. I can't wait for the authors that are coming here within the next couple months to showcase them as much as they should be, because they've done a marvelous job with writing. Some of these first-time authors amaze me. And some of them that I've had on the show in the past, back way back in 2011 when we first started, have gone on to wonderful careers as being authors. And I would bet that they're not working regular jobs anymore. Most of them, I can think of a handful of them that aren't, that were on the Writer's Lounge. So we're very proud of those people. And again, we'd probably like to have them back on, and we can do that too. But anyways, March 15th will be the next show. That's a Monday. And stay tuned to that segment. And if you want to check to find out who's going to be on that show, please visit us over at the Writer's Lounge Showcasing New Authors Facebook page. Predominantly, that's where you're going to find all the news about the show. And of course, you can visit me and find out more about me over at thomasrydell.net. And with that, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in live, or if you're on demand, you can do that too. And I'd like to thank you all for giving me a chance to be a part of this wonderful world we call books. Until then, till the next time, let the story begin.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met, so the world would never forget. And the simple secret of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the